Today's episode of Don't Make Me Come Back There is brought to you by Dow Vineyards. Yep. Dow knows that picking an everyday red wine can be tricky, and they make that easy with 2018 Dow Central Coast Pinot Noir. Backseaters can enjoy exclusive access and free shipping on orders of three or more bottles with promo code PASO at dowvineyards.com/don't make me come back there. That is promo code PASO at dowvineyards.com/don't make me come back there. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I'm a stand-up comedian and the host of the aforementioned podcast. And alongside me, back in bed with me, is a one, Stephen English, stand-up comedian, co-host, and producer of Don't Make Me Come Back There.
Again, more titles than you, so
you do. That's, you know what? You know, but it's like Apollo Creed in how, remember how many nicknames he has? You know, the Sultan of SWAT, which I'm pretty sure is just a Babe Ruth one. Right. And they go over to Rocky, he's like, "How many nicknames does this guy have?" That was a really good Sylvester Stallone. "How many nicknames does this guy have?" And then, but you know what? Who won the fight? Actually, that was Rocky won. I think Apollo won the fight. Yeah. Welcome to our little podcast that could, everybody. I appreciate you guys tuning in. We hope you guys are doing well, all things considered. We thank you for your continued support of our podcast. Backseaters, thank you. Special shout out to our patrons. You guys, we're thankful to have you. We really, really are. And today, we have a guest that we've had a lot of requests to have on the podcast. We have Mike Goodwin, comedian Mike Goodwin, ladies and gentlemen. Mike and I have known each other for a while, but we kind of talk a little bit about in the intro, like for whatever reason, we just don't work together. Even though we kind of swim in similar waters and we're in different circles, we've done like two or three gigs together ever. And I was hoping to, you know, to get to do the in-person interview. You know, Steve and I, you know, I prefer the in-person interviews. And, but...
He likes a smell. He likes to get a nice whiff.
It really is. It's a body thing. I like to feel the extra density in the room. I feel like, you know how you can like tell somebody's in a room sometimes when you walk in? I like that feeling. Yeah. And I couldn't have that with Mike. So instead we Zoomed. We Zoomed. And
I bought a mannequin, which I thought was weird. You bought a mannequin and just put it in the room.
You know, that is for other purposes. And target practice.
I wish you were on my board, man. I'd be doing morning show sound effects right now.
Yes.
Oh man, but I can't run it through it right now.
It's target practice is what it is for my slingshot. I have a slingshot that only shoots rolled up pieces of meat.
Oh yeah.
See, that's what I would have done right there.
It's so dumb. So stupid. Anyways, Mike and I have a good talk. We talk a lot about his life, his quarantine life, what he's been up to, when his last gig was. We talk about upcoming work. We talk about his Zoom shows, how those are going. We talk about his wife, who's in the medical field. I don't want to spoil anything there, but it's interesting. We talk about his kids and how they're doing with everything. We talk a decent amount towards the end on kind of, you know, his unique perspective on the way that we got into it, as I just kind of asked, like, how much do you talk to your kids about current events? And specifically right now, with him being African-American, the Christian Cooper and the George Floyd stories, like, I just wondered, like, his daughter's 13 and his son's 9. And so we kind of, like, eased into it. I just, because that's always really interesting to me, is, like, how much do you, like, tell your 13-year-old about what's going on in the world?
Right.
You know? And that leads into kind of a longer discussion about race issues. And, you know, Mike is African-American. He served in the military for 12 years. He lives in the South. And, you know, his wife is in kind of the public health spectrum. And he's in comedy. It's just really interesting. Helpful perspective, and I was happy to talk to him about it. So I will say this, you know, we kind of at the end, it's definitely some heavier tones than certain episodes, but not all of our episodes. We got plenty of serious episodes on our little comedy podcast here. So if you're not sure about whether or not you should listen to your kids, what I would recommend is you listening to it without them and then deciding, because I actually think, like, this is one I probably will play for Joel because it's more serious, because it's mm-hmm. in, you know, like, hey, I would right. like to hear you, you know, what we're trying to do here as a podcast is to get to hear people's perspectives and right. unique family experiences and stories. And like, so I think it might be one that you're like, ooh, I don't know if my kid should listen to this. Well, I would say listen to it and make the decision, but it might be a really good one for your kid right. to listen to. Does that make sense?
If you do have like kids that are like young tween to teenage kids who are listening, this is just for them. Fart. So there you go. You're welcome. I'm sure that made them laugh.
Oh yeah,
made
yeah.
Dustin laugh, and he's 47 years old.
You would have made the noise. 49. Thank you.
I would have. Yeah, if I'd have had the board, I'd have been like. Uh-oh.
I know you're so excited about getting that board. You. But I originally you and I were going to do this in person, but yeah. Dorothy said, mm-mm.
Yep. She saw a picture of you recently. She said he looks like he's riddled with the disease. And not even coronavirus, yeah. not even like the just a whole, she had a whole yeah. list of ones that she was.
That picture was from gout. January 2017. January 2017. Well, I mean, who doesn't have gout?
I mean, we've done a bit about this before. We did it.
Did we do a gout disease? Oh, it's the King's disease. We did that. That's right.
You get it by eating shrimp and crabs. And we've done this. Everything. I feel like at a certain point, we're going to get to a point where we've done every single joke that I have ever thought of. Every single thing I've ever thought funny. I've already done fart. That was pretty much the last thing I had.
I mean, let's be honest. Fart. That's most of your act. I wanted. I don't know gout. If you'd read. Gout is just such a funny word. I don't think we had read this one on here. We this email that we got. We love you know, when you guys shoot us emails that don't make me come back there, gmail.com. But somebody, let me see if I can find this. Somebody sent us a little note. Okay, so we're a little behind on emails, you know, because we like to be able to do this.
And I just learned to read.
Yeah, exactly. Oh gosh, so it's exhausting to read.
I mean, I feel brave for it, but whatever. For telling people, I feel like that's a brave thing, but whatever. Let's
yeah,
just
no, you're right. Well, just, you know, I think that this shows you're talking about things that we repeat over and how we're not that original right. and how people really disagree with the things that we say. This is an email we got from Brad. Brad says, to whom it may concern, right. sorry I'm a little behind on the potty, but I've been so busy quarantining at home with seven kids. Hello.
That's
seven kids. Too many kids. Yeah. I would say three is too many, and that is four more than three. I listened to the intro, and I'm not sure whose hot take was worse, Steven's dislike for barbecue or you choosing D. Wade, right? Because somebody asked if you get anybody's career,
sure.
who would it be? The guy who needed a wheelchair for a hurt shoulder. I'm not sure I can ever take your parenting advice seriously again. Well, good news, Brad. You should never take the parenting advice seriously. But, you know, that's, I think, you know, that's a fair debate. I mean, who has the worst hot take of those two things? I think clearly you.
I will say this. There's this place in San Diego called Grand Ole Barbecue that I had, and I had to tell my wife and my parents who we're eating with.
Yeah,
I had said, I've said this before because I've said it every time. It was like, every time we get barbecue, I'm like, whatever. We get like Phil's or whatever. I'm always like, it's just tastes
Phil's
like,
is no good. Yeah.
It tastes like nothing. But Grand Ole Barbecue in San Diego is absolutely delicious.
Was it like a brisket or what'd you get? Like, it depends.
We got some ribs. The ribs were delicious and a brisket. Yeah. Or I forget what we got.
Like baby but it was back really, ribs really or good. Pork ribs. What kind of ribs you get?
Man, I don't know. I don't eat barbecue that much. It was meat. It was very clearly meat on a bone and another thing that was meat not on a bone. I didn't ask. I didn't order. Okay.
Sounds
I just
like
ate
you
it.
Got
it was very
brisket
good.
And ribs. But what I'm saying is like, was it this where, you know, pork ribs are usually like singular by themselves, whereas no, baby back ribs. Yeah, you're like baby back ribs. You're clearly eating the rib cage of an animal.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's it at? Where's cool. Grand Ole Barbecue? Like, yeah.
It's in South Park. It's right by, you know where Thorn Street Brewing is?
Yeah.
It's right behind it now.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
it's
right.
Very good.
Well, that's good to know.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, actually, I think I have been there. Yeah. It's real tucked away. It's like in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Baby.
It's fantastic. So I've started to slowly change my mind. Now that I know that actual really good barbecue does exist, I'm starting to change my mind.
That answers the question, Brad. Clearly.
Again, me being brave. That's just me being brave.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't change my opinion on D. Wade. I still think that's a pretty pretty baller career, you know?
Yeah. Married to Gabrielle Union, so there you go. It's pretty cool.
Oh, didn't he do one season? He did like two seasons elsewhere. Didn't he go like he left Miami and then he came back because he was in Cleveland for a second, yeah. And then he was in like Chicago for a second.
I don't remember. You know, honestly, I don't recall very clearly, but I think you might be right.
Anyways, you only like you're a baseball guy.
I'm more of a KBO guy now. I'm just a Korean baseball associate.
Yeah. Yeah,
Doosan Bears.
I bet they get some sweet gear.
I've been to like 6-7 games at that stadium. It's awesome.
Yeah, you need to order some merch for us.
I have it somewhere. I have a jersey somewhere tucked away.
Of course you do. Doesn't surprise me that you bought that at all. Okay. And then I want to read one more email. This one is from Thomas Duran. This one is from Thomas D.
Thomas D.
In Fernandina Beach, Florida. Fernandina Beach, Florida. All right.
That's made up. That sounds made up.
Yeah, that's definitely made up.
Yeah, you're on the run from somebody.
He's from Ferngully, Florida.
Right.
Okay. Dustin, this is just to me. You don't get to respond to this. I confess that I have failed. My three boys, 16, 12, and 10, all have horrid taste in music. I'm a massive fan of bands like U2. Okay, first off, if you're saying that you have great taste in music, don't lead with U2.
Right.
I like U2, but then he says David Bowie, Florence and the Machine, The Decemberists, The Black Keys, Cake. Now he's just naming bands that he knows I like. My boys like dulcet tones of 80s video game beeps and blips. Think Geometry Dash music all freaking day long. Help me. Where did I go wrong? P.S. When are you coming to Florida? Thomas in Ferngully Beach, Florida.
Right. Those kids are just living in the future, man. They're just future kids.
Yeah, that's true. I actually think you have robot kids. I think you have kids. Yeah. You've heard of Children of the Corn. These are children of the bots.
Right.
These are just
Android
little
kids.
Yeah. Hopefully, what would you say to a kid or to a parent that their kid just has terrible taste in music? I mean, I think that's pretty common that your kids don't like your music.
Right. I would say we played like the most eclectic. Like if I look at my like Spotify, like, you know, like recently played, it is, I mean, the definition of eclectic. Like I'm like all over the map.
Dude, it is the niche of eclect.
The niche of eclect is what I would say it is. The niche of eclect.
Yeah.
I listen to Hawaiian music that's not even in English, like in Hawaiian. And the next thing I'll listen to this dude, PJ Morton, who's very great, very piano. Then I listen to Caspar.
Caspar Baby Pants is
Caspar
the truth.
Baby Pants, which is a music for literal babies. And I will listen to that because I will
small
say
small little broken
again,
truck, baby.
Some
beep.
Of those things slap, dude. Some of those music slaps, bro.
I
listen to very eclectic music, so I hope my kids grow up and they like
that they'll
because I'm
grab some
them
of
to
it
so
yeah.
much different music that they
but
would,
what if they but, don't like what if they come out like in reggae, which to me is the
I
worst of the you love reggae to me reggae is the worst of the musics.
What are you talking about?
Well, here's the thing. Reggae pawns itself off as having more than one song. There isn't there's one reggae song.
It's all Zydeco adjacent.
Yeah, it's like
Zydeco's the same thing as Zydeco. Zydeco has one. It's just the and someone playing
Monas Yahoo.
I will say this. There are different strains of reggae, and there are people who are like if you listen to Barrington Levy, Barrington Levy, that doesn't sound anything like Bob Marley. Yes,
I'm not going to let you be a reggae apologist on this podcast. you've earned a lot of grace here, but defending reggae, you can't do. But the real question is, so what if your kid likes bad music? I mean, right. I think it's pretty clear. You're going to have to take ownership of that you raised a kid with bad taste. And I don't know. I think it's...
Look cooler while you listen to the music. Because if you look like a
that's
nerd
a good
while
point.
You listen to good music,
that's
they're going to associate
kinda,
your nerdiness
it,
has gone over to the good music.
Yeah, that's true. I would just say ride it out with them, because a lot of time, like I didn't like my dad's music growing up, but I like it more now. Right. You know, I say just wait. And then if they're in their 20s and their 30s and they're still, you know, listening to that, I would just say just gradually grow apart from them.
Okay.
You know, just kind of let the distance. Don't answer their calls on holidays. Mm-hmm. You know, just
Don't like any of the pictures of the kids.
No,
the
grandkids. No. Don't thank them when they send you pictures of the grandkids in the mail.
Right.
You know, just let it fade and let them have their music and you have your music and just be two different families at that point.
Right. Bono's your son now.
No, you're Bono's son. You're a child of Bono, of Bono and the Edge. Anyways, guys, I hope you enjoy this episode with Mike Goodwin. Make sure to give him a follow at Bowtie Comedy. Really funny comic, and it's a fun episode. If you guys haven't already, please rate and review our podcast. Share it with your friends. Share it on your socials. Shoot us emails at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Pinterest. We're not on Pinterest, but you know, maybe if you want to start.
Review us on Yelp.
Give us a Yelp review. Page. That'd be great.
Yeah. But leave a bad one.
All right, everybody. Enjoy this episode. Here we are. Mike Goodwin, ladies and gentlemen, at Bowtie Comedy in the flesh. By in the flesh, I mean, what, 3,000 miles away from me?
Yeah, it's a while. It's like at least a flight if you want to, within the same day.
Yeah, in a San Diego to what city are you in?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah, so it's not a direct flight.
No.
Yeah.
Probably two connections.
All I know is I'm going to be going through Atlanta. That's all I know.
At some point.
Yeah, so you're at home. When was the last time you did stand-up, and do you know when the next time you're going to do stand-up is?
March 13th.
Is the next time? I hope not the next time.
I hope it's not the next time. I had a show in Atlanta.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I was listening to the audio yesterday, like it was an ex-girlfriend that we had.
Like pictures of your ex-girlfriend in your phone.
You just saw a picture on Facebook. You was like, man. What happened?
That's so funny.
I thought that went well, but I guess it didn't turn out well.
Yeah, what was the gig? Do you remember?
It was a pastor. A pastor was retiring. So they were having a pastor's retirement program. I did about 25 minutes. Really good, really good.
Yeah. What did they? Did you know the pastor, or did they just bring in the comedian?
I had done their church. I had done like a Memorial Day event, maybe like in 13. Okay. Then they brought me back a couple of years later, so I was familiar with the ministry.
Yeah.
And so they reached back out, and said, "Hey, man, we want to bring you in for this thing."
Nice. Did you? When's your next one, or do you know?
Well, I do like the virtual stuff. So
yeah.
I mean, I got something tomorrow. I got one Saturday. I got one next Saturday. But in live, I think maybe June there's something on the books, but I don't feel too confident about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is very like, I know things are changing a little bit in my life because like one of my top three emojis, and this was never in the top before. One of my top three emojis now is the fingers crossed.
You didn't even know that existed.
No.
Now you were just on stage live somewhere, right?
Oh yeah, but there weren't people there. That was at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, and they hit me up, and it was so funny because I don't work the Laugh Factory barely at all. And they were like, "Hey, you want to come to our virtual show?" And I was like, "Apparently, this is the only time that I get booked here. Is you know, in the middle of a pandemic, and it's a 2 p.m. show, and there's only comics there, and we're not even being good crowd members. Like, we're like comics on our phones, comics. Like, and they're like, just talk to the camera, and you know, just the booker's watching, and da da da. We're doing it every day, you know. But it was." I mean, we were only doing 15 minutes, which was fine. The guy in front of me is a comic who I know, this guy named AD. And AD, I know because we did Heart of the City together, and
he did like almost 40 minutes and he was supposed to do 15.
Uh-oh.
And I was just dying because I was like, come on, man. Like, I know.
What number was he?
He was right before me. So he was fourth out of fifth. So, like, I was just watching the live viewers go, like, not because he was doing so bad, but he's just up there too long. You can't watch somebody do 40 minutes for no crowd for that long. And I was making fun of him so much afterwards. It's like, man, you are that committed to running the light that you do it on a virtual show, like a non-show you ran. But he didn't – the show was so loose that he didn't really know he didn't time himself, and they weren't given a light. And he had no laugh. So he had – I knew as a comic, I knew as like he doesn't know what his time is. Right. He probably said what else about four times. I was like, someone give him the light. He's done. He's going through his whole act right now.
You got – we have internal clocks that you know.
Yeah.
That feels about like 10.
Yeah. I gave him the benefit of the doubt at first because we do have internal clocks. And we also have normal clocks, by the way. You can put your phone on the stool. That's what I did.
Right.
But I also, our internal clocks, a lot of the time, they involve us, like, they involve the laugh a little bit, you know? And so we had no laugh. We weren't getting laughs. And so, but then when he hit almost 40, I was like, AD, you're killing me.
Dude, 25 is like my man.
Yeah, wrap it up. You can't triple the light.
Come on, my man.
So anyways, it was fun, all things considered. But like, it's just, you know, the chat. I posted the one. Yeah, you might have seen it. I posted the one picture of just the comment. Just gay.
Right. Now, did you have to wear those gloves or that was part of your?
Yeah, that was they. So there's no one in the crowd, but you know, the comics, what they did is they would just Lysol the mic in between each of us. And then they made us wear gloves. Yeah. Yeah. It was,
that's not a good smell. That latex.
No, it's not even a good look. Like, I mean, of course it's not a good look. The joke that I did about it is AD went up, and AD is a big African-American guy. He's like he played college basketball. He's a big jock looking dude. Right. And he said, whenever, you know, the mask makes me look like, when I go into place, it looks like I'm going to commit a crime. That's what people think. People think I'm going to commit a crime.
Right.
The joke that I did is this is affecting me too, because when I put on gloves, it looks like I'm going to frame AD for a crime. And I got lured into a false sense of confidence, because that was clearly a riff about the comics. So the comics actually perked up and laughed, and I was like, okay, I might have a thing here. And then I got into my act, and they're like, we're good.
So you could see the comics while you were performing.
No, the comics. Yeah, I couldn't see the comics. Thankfully, I couldn't see the comments, because they were. I mean, they're just the troll of trolls, right? Like, they're just...
Who's watching a comedy show at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
2 in the afternoon. That's what my wife said. She was like, why are they doing it right now? And I was like, well, you know, for East Coast time. She's like, just put it at 5, and it's 8 on the East Coast. I was like, you raise a good point. You do. But I'll tell you, though, it did. It felt good to get into. It felt good to go into a comedy club. It felt good to go. It's not like it's the first time I performed for nobody in a comedy club, you know. Right. So just the rhythms of seeing a comic and getting the light and like just asking and giving your introduction and getting on the stage, like that felt good, you know.
Yeah, man, that's a big missing part, man. I'm one of these people that go to therapy, and I was talking to my therapist about this. Like, hey, man, I feel like something's missing, but I didn't really know what it was. And she was like, you are missing that instant gratification. Like, you're not getting that anywhere. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's no opportunity for you to get instant gratification. And that was a huge part of.
Yeah. That's a. I'm glad that you go to therapy and told me that, because I'm feeling that.
It's always awkward to be like, "Hey, man,
yeah,
I'm going to therapy."
Well, that's no. I mean, thankfully, like the stigma around that is going away.
Right.
You know. Right. And where I live in Southern California, it's almost more of a stigma if you're not in therapy.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, like it's part of your brand out here. You know, you got to take selfies. Every city and region has their hack topics, you know, like, right. You know, if you're in New York, it's the subway.
Right.
You know, I don't know what it is in the South, maybe food or something. Southern. I don't know.
Yeah. Some type of food.
Yeah. In LA, it's therapy. Therapy is like the hack topic. You're just in traffic. Which maybe they go hand in hand, but like it's amazing how many premises you hear in LA of like, I was talking to my therapist the other day, and then they go to Dayton and they're surprised that didn't work. I'm like, well, yeah, they don't relate to that. They don't.
I remember I was at a show in Oakland and they brought in these LA comics.
Yeah.
And it was not the same show. Like something happened.
Something happened.
They were talking about traffic, you know, LA traffic. And
yeah,
they were talking like LA centric, but they were in Oakland. And it was like, right. Hey, man, I know you didn't drive that far, but it's not.
Yeah, you drove to a different world, though. You didn't drive that far. But how are you and the fam doing in the court? Because how many kids you have again?
Two children. I have a daughter who is 13 and a son who is 9.
How's everybody doing? Two and a half, 3 months in? How long have you been quarantining?
So we are in South Carolina where they're opening up stuff. So people are like bowling.
Yeah.
And getting tattoos and tanning. So
all the musts, all the ones you have to get.
The things that you were erred, like you had to have, they are doing the thing. So we're probably on like quarantine light. like we're not eating out or anything, but
yeah.
I've gotten a haircut once and I'm doing some stuff with
the
community. But yeah, we're pretty much here. It's surprising how I think my kids are pretty well adjusted. I mean, my son doesn't want to shower, so this benefits him.
Does not benefit you though.
Not at all. Like he works at a paper mill or something. Like he smells like an adult. Like, you're 9. How are you able to accumulate this much funk?
You're not even leaving the house. Like it just grows on you.
Like you wake up in the morning smelling like like a karate dojo. Like what are you doing in your room?
Man, you smell like a football helmet. You smell so bad.
At the end of the season, like after the playoffs.
Half the pads are missing. It's all sweat stains.
It's discolored. You just don't know what happened in there.
Yeah.
It's a petri dish for disease. Like this is probably where the cure for the coronavirus is located.
Well, that's the thing. COVID, thankfully, barely hurts kids, and that's because most kids, they got whatever they got on them is worse,
right?
I told
they pass it readily, like they just are walking.
Yeah, I told this, I think I might have told this once on the pod before, but my son told me like the week of the week before quarantine started that he got dared to eat a Skittle off of his friend's retainer. And he did it. And he did it. And there wasn't to get anything. It was to get the Skittle. That was the reward. And I was like, I think you might have started coronavirus. I think you might have been. Yeah.
The origin story of corona.
Off the retainer. Oh. I don't know if I could think of anything. I mean, much
grosser. That's what boys do. They do that.
Yeah. And it wasn't even, I asked them, I was like, did it get a big reaction? And most of the kids were like, oh, cool. Like, it wasn't even, like, they weren't going nuts or anything.
Right. That should have been a standing ovation of, like, disgust. This kid's amazing.
They should have put it on his shoulders, yeah.
We saw somebody do that yesterday on the internet.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were like, listen, this will be good on TikTok. Thank you. So did you, how's the girl doing then, and your wife, and how's the rest of that? The boys loving it.
Yeah, man, I thought I'd be having more sex doing doing the pandemic. Just by average, just by, you know, just we eat.
Like days home, yeah.
We just here.
Yeah. Ends up, you were at the maximum amount already.
Yeah. Yeah, it was already, we were at capacity. So.
You were like a restaurant during COVID. Like, listen, this is as big as we get. This is as many people as we let in.
The drive-in's open. You can come. You have no dine-in options.
Takeout is available.
Drive-through is available.
No contact takeout is available.
Right, right. We'll come to the door. Maybe. But other than that, I think we figured out, because I'm used to being here by myself at some point through the day. Like,
right.
Kids go to school, wife goes to work, and like, this is my space. And now I feel like they are on top of me, because I'm pretty self-sufficient, but.
Yeah. What does your wife do?
Like, she's a hospital administrator, so she's in the thick of this thing.
Oh, my. Is she going into hospitals then?
Well, she works for the South Carolina Hospital Association, so they're a client.
Okay.
All the hospitals in the state. So she's not, but she's been doing, like, early on, she did a lot of interviews for radio and television stations.
Okay.
Constantly on calls. You know, I made the decision. I said, hey, man, you can't take a business call in the bed. Like, it's affecting the mojo in here. Like, you can't
be especially, on a, yeah, especially that kind of business call.
Yeah, you can't not here, man. Get
no, down. No. If you were selling yoga pants, maybe.
Yeah. You talking about deaths and the ventilators. Like, man, you got to take this. This is a comfortable, this peaceful place. This is this is where we have solace. You can't be in the bed doing this kind of business.
Oh man, what's her, I mean, it's like, I mean, that one of the most frustrating things about this is like just the million different takes, right? Like, you talk to somebody and it's so few people have a truly objective take,
right? You know? Right.
And that's not just this issue, that's just life in general, right? Right. I mean, we're informed by our circumstances and how we are raised and what has, you know, what things we've experienced and, you know, how we were educated and all these type things, you know, how our brains put together. There's a million different things. And, right. And but so I talked to a nurse friend for a while yesterday. People in the medical world, I think particularly what I'm always curious about their takes are is like on the reopenings, you know, like, hey, is this, I mean, in our world, I'm like, is this cool? Because I'm getting asked to do some things, but I want to be responsible, because we don't just we don't just go and do it. We promote it. We invite people to come see us do it, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, she's been kind of conflicted, because I think things are moving a little faster than she would feel comfortable.
Right.
You know, even with us, like, me having health insurance, like, I'm like, why do I have health insurance? My health insurance keeps going. Every time I get a letter, the premium's higher. Right. And I'm always like, why do, but she's always like the rational thought mind, like, you need
right.
to have. And I'm like, and I'm saying all the stuff that people say, these big companies are taking advantage. And she's like, calm down. What else would you propose? Like, you know, like, what's your solution?
Yeah.
Premiums, sir. I saw what you made on your time.
Man, that is the truth of just like, I think what, it's so easy to shut down somebody's take and their, whether it's someone saying we need to reopen or they're saying we don't need to reopen or we shouldn't reopen, you need to then, I mean, it needs to come with a counter, not a counter, but an additional, well, then what's your plan?
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Right.
Yeah, because people need to work. You know? Like, people, it's not, you know, one of my least favorite takes is when people are saying, you know, oh, the economy is not more important than lives. Well, I understand the economy, we're not talking about Wall Street. We're talking about livelihood. It's the same thing. Right. The economy is right. people's lives. I don't care about your right. stocks. I care about your right. paycheck.
If you can't have a home,
yeah,
you know, make money, you can't yeah. do things that you need to do to not be homeless.
Exactly. And it's okay to care about both those things. It's right. okay to care about the spread of COVID and the bad economy.
These are the days we live in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so she's yeah, she's probably is she feeling that is that like bringing a stress then? Like, I mean, is she feeling oh, that on her shoulders all the time?
Constant stress, you know, because part of that is the tremendous amount of people in the African American community that are being affected by COVID. And it's
yeah.
And not maybe just African American, but you know, poor people, but it impacts our community tremendously. And so yeah. there's just extra layer of we're not having all the conversations that need to be had. Like
right.
we're talking about when we're going to reopen, we're talking about ventilators, but we're not talking about how this is impacting a particular community in our state. Why aren't we having those conversations? And that ties on to, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, just other right. issues
right.
are political versus like, no, this is affecting people. This is affecting right. individual families. And so how do you extract politics from doing good, and shouldn't politicians do good? I mean, it's a very complicated yeah. conversation.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they should do good.
Yeah.
I feel they like should. I've been talking to Melissa. My wife's name is Melissa. I don't think you've ever met her, have you?
I don't think so. I feel like I know her because you post so much about her and you talk so much about
how yeah. it. Yeah. It's one of those things that, again, you and I have only been in the same place like 3-4 times ever, which is funny.
It's like we're the same person. Like, yeah. we both can't be there. Like, yeah. if I'm there, you can't be there. And if you're there,
you guys know the rules. We can't have Mike and Dustin for whatever reason.
This is too much.
Because so many of our friends work the same gigs together. And they'll be like, yeah, man, I saw so-and-so 10 times in June. Like, I haven't seen Mike since June 2015.
Yeah, it's very, very bizarre. Like, we work with the same people, but never together. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think that there's what I was talking to Melissa about, how part of adulthood, you know, part of, like, gaining perspective, at least for me, and I think this is true of a lot of people, of realizing that all people, like, are just people. And that even if they are people in a position of power, they're just a person. And you start to realize that of, like, Newsom in California is very controversial. And people are calling him like a tyrant. And then other people are like, oh, he's for sure going to be the next president. And I look at it, right. I was like, nah, he's just a guy. He's not from above. He's not like, right. And you start to feel that way about, and it doesn't diminish them. Like, whether it's like, I would say the ones that jump to mind are like politicians and military and pastors and police officers and all these things that were like, and sometimes based on, you know, your experience that you've put in this, like, they've been taught to you, like, no, these are leaders, these are heroes, these are, and some of them are
right,
and then, but all of them are just a person, you right. know. And I think
with my son, he was talking, you know, the big thing with a 9-year-old is like monitoring what he's watching on YouTube.
Right. So
he was watching something. It wasn't out of control, but it was something like I didn't think a 9-year-old should be watching.
Right, right.
I asked him, where did, you know, why, who told you about this? And it was a son of a pastor, you know, and he was like, well, because he said it, Mm-hmm. I thought it was good. And I was like, oh, no. He's not the pastor. Like, he's the son of a pastor.
Yeah, which so, means he's worse than most normal.
He's not doing anything
good. Yeah.
But all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
But I had to have that conversation around, like, just because his father's a pastor doesn't mean he's going to tell you to watch all good stuff. And
right.
Even if he was just the pastor, like, there,
right.
People are going to make decisions that sometimes it goes against who they are in right. The belief system. But you can't put them at a place where you're so disappointed, you know, like people leave the faith because, yeah. Oh my God, I would have never thought my pastor would do that. Or you hold him at this status of like, I know you're not doing that. You know, it's like, they're still people. They are flawed.
Yeah.
They make mistakes. We're all in process.
Right. Yeah. And I think that like some of it you realize too, like that's just the job they ended up with. You know, like you were, what military branch were you in?
In the Army.
You were in the Army. How 4 years or did you stay long? How long?
I did long. Yeah. So I did probably in total about 12 years.
Oh, I didn't realize that. 12 years.
Yeah.
The Army to me is, military is a good example of like, there's a lot of heroes in the Army. A lot of them. There's a lot of people who just signed up for the Army too.
It's knuckleheads. What are you doing here? Like, I serve with those guys. Like, I know those guys. Why are you... Did they not screen? Like, what happened?
Why are you here?
What are you doing here? If one person came right to mind when you said that. I
Well, I think we remember, you know, because you know everybody, like... And this isn't to diminish anyone serving. God bless you. I'm thankful for you. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have the freedoms we do because of the military. But all I mean by that is you demystify the process a little bit. Like when you realize that, like, you can just sign up for the Army. You know, like it wasn't like God selecting his warriors.
Yeah, like loyalty, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. But I mean, one of the great things about the military is obviously it has an opportunity to shape individuals who, remember, we all had that friend that you went to high school with and you're like, oh, you're going to be in the Army. And then 4 years later, it's like, you're a better person than me now. That's all that took. You just needed a...
Hey, I'm following that guy. Like, yeah. Where he's going.
Yeah, you needed a schedule. That's all you needed.
You needed some boundaries.
That's exactly it. You needed some limitations in your life. So overall, I mean, that's crazy. That's your wife has got to just constantly be feeling the pressure of that right now.
Right.
And does she feel it like in a... how do I say this? Does she feel it in like a personal responsibility type way? Like this is like on her? Because what I don't know what kind of job she has. Does she affect policy and decision making and all those kind of things?
Yeah, man. I met my wife in college, and that was kind of her trajectory. Her grandmother went to a nursing home early in her life, or her great grandmother, and she just saw the care that some of the patients were receiving, and just felt like, man, someone has to be on voice in healthcare. Like no one's speaking for, you know, she's from rural South Carolina, small town. So that was her deal, man. She went to college. I remember my wife like she was interning or working at like this surgeon, this doctor's office throughout college. She went and got a master's MPA. So like master's in public health, I think that's what it was. Yeah. Then she worked for the governor of South Carolina at one point. I think that was her first job.
Crazy.
Then she worked for hospital system. Then she worked for, now she works for the Association of South Carolina Hospital Association. So like my wife could be the governor. Like,
yeah.
I could be like the first gentleman at some point in my life. Like that's not far fetched.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of path that she is on, has been on. So yeah, there is a personal calling, vocation that's connected into her work. And just by virtue, like my mom works with us, and because my wife, they created a hair barrette, so they started this business. Mm-hmm. But my mom is, you know, a single woman who makes X amount of money, so needs this particular assistance. So it's like trying to get her signed up for insurance. So it's just like, it's personal, but then there's also kind of trying to do the most good for the most people. So I think that's kind of her position or thought.
Does she feel like she has to then, and I mean, this is a question for her, I suppose, but you are a part of it, you know, cause you're in the house and in her life. Like, does she have to like compartmentalize at times, as far as like, if this stuff just hits me all the time, I can't like just live my day to day and be present in the moment? Or is that stuff just too big and it's more of like kind of like a calling? Like, no, this is what
I think who she is, man. Yeah. I think it all just, you know, cascades down into her.
Yeah.
And so we are mindful of trying to create outlets in our home and have conversations, and, you know, because she works with me in terms of my entrepreneur endeavors. Yeah. So she's pretty hands-on. You know, she does a lot of the bookings.
Yeah.
Got a lot going on.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot going on.
I would love to see you be the first gentleman of South Carolina. I mean.
Hey, the first gentleman doing comedy. It probably would be good for a campaign, I'm telling you.
It wouldn't be. I mean, they're going to start going through every tweet, every joke, every dumb Zoom call podcast.
I'm out. I'm out. It's too many skeletons. Too many. I got a science. I got an eighth grade science department in my life.
This is cool. So you said then the your girl is 13?
Right.
So my boy is 13. And one of the things that I'm always like curious about how people are kind of raising their teens is like, how much does your child know is going on in the world at any given time, as far as news and current events and presidential and politics? And you kind of talk through those things, or just kind of try and create an oasis away from those things? And are they on social media and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I guess it's a combination of, you know, they're not on social media. My daughter didn't have a cell phone.
We're in the minority.
We're fighting a good fight.
Yeah. My current take, my son is like, when do I get a phone? I was like, when you buy a phone? I don't know. It's not.
When you get a job, I think.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing in this contract that says I need to provide you a phone.
And I can get to where you are. Like, I know the places.
Yeah. He has a little thing. It's called a Gab phone. All it can do is text. That's right. All it can do. And no pictures, no nothing, no internet access. That's all I need. I need to know where you're at, you know?
So, yeah, so, man, I'm constantly, you know, we're talking about, in fact, I'm having her read a letter from the Birmingham jail that Dr. King wrote. And we're going to talk through that. And, you know, we watched The Last Dance together. So we look at cultural things.
Yeah.
Talk about what's going on, especially if it, you know, because some of that, you know, she's at a public school, so there's conversations that to be had, like,
right,
hey man, what are your teachers saying about this? Like, what's going on as it relates to the current state of race relations,
right,
politics? So we're having those conversations. My desire is for her to be able to process what people are saying, mm-hmm. know what she believes, and receive information and make a educated
kind
of understand. You know, and I try not to say this is what it, you know, it's separate from the Bible. Like, this is our belief. Right. And this is what, and even in that, man, it's not like the Lord. Hey man, look.
Yeah.
It's tricky out here. It's very tricky out here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
These are the things that have fed me and led. So I'm really from a me perspective, not, you know, the word says this and, you know, but let's look at how this practically works itself out. Look at how life happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we're not like, as far as our podcast goes, we don't really, you know, dive much into politics or a lot of current events, but the thing that always is interesting to me, because I think this is the thread that ties humanity together, is family. And so talking about like racial relations as an African-American dad to your African-American children, right, is like, it's not, I don't want to say fascinating, because that almost makes it sound like it's something I'm studying, you know. Very interesting.
I like what's going on over there.
Like I'm making observations, you know.
Right.
But it is, it's crucial is what it is. I mean, it's an actual representation of what families are dealing with. So like taking like, so specific examples, like, do you talk to your kids about or show them the videos of the Christian Cooper thing or the George Floyd or whatever it may be? Or do you just kind of say these things happen? And how do you kind of walk through those discussions? Or do you? I understand 13-year-old, 9-year-old, different. And those are two very different cases, both terrible, both blatant examples of racism that need to be condemned, but one a little easier to watch than the other, you know?
Right. I think, you know, we hadn't showed any videos that, you know, from my not, but we have conversations. And I think the piece for me is to, I'm constantly trying to have the conversation before the conversation is needed to be had.
Yeah.
So talking about, again, I talk, you know, a lot about my experience and how even like the 4th of July is a conversation that we have. I talk about, look, I'm an American. We are Americans. I've served in the military. But at the founding of our nation, we were not considered full humans. And so we walk through that, you know, and I say, look, this is where some of the challenges are in terms of the promise that America's made and then what has happened to folks in black and brown skin through the course of time.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm more conscious, more from a, I guess, a historic perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess how people like pastors try to, you know, they talk from the biblical perspective to make sense of modern day things. I kind of take that approach, like, yeah, let's look at what has happened and why have these things happened and what are the consequences of these things that have happened and what have you encountered? Because I'm, you know, like my life is going to be tremendously different from my children's life. And I even am sensitive about being careful about the messages that I'm communicating. You know, I didn't, you know, one of the things that I learned when I was a kid is like, man, you're a young black man, you got to work twice as hard as everyone else. You know, you had to go, you know, we were talking about my wife earlier. I mean, I used to work at a private school before I started doing comedy full time. And I was one of a handful of African-Americans there. And I used to have the weight of the world. Like, I'm representing for all the black people at this job. So when Mike comes to work on time, it's not like all are late. It's not just Mike came to work late. It's all black people are late. So like, you walk around with some of that baggage. And so what I try to do with my children is to communicate, you have a life to be lived and you have so much promise and so much opportunity, but let's look at what's happened. Let's look at what happened to your grandmother. Matt, you know, one thing that's interesting, my wife's mother, she's from South Carolina. She graduated from South Carolina State, which is the historically black college here in South Carolina. Well, one of them.
Right.
She could not attend the University of South Carolina when she was a high school student. But since she sent three of her children to the University of South Carolina.
Wow.
Like, that's my daughter's grandmother. Like, that's she crazy. Could not go to the school.
Yeah.
I have a degree from the University of South Carolina. We're huge Gamecock fans. Like, that's our team.
Yeah.
But I have those conversations. Like, look, it wasn't that long ago.
Right.
Your grandmother could not attend. Like, that was not an option.
It's crazy the changes in a generation, right? Like, when I try and explain to my children, like, the idea that there were separate water fountains for people of different skin color, and they're like, how long ago? And I'm like, not that long ago. Like, they're not in my lifetime.
Like, but nanas.
your grandpa's lifetime. Absolutely. Yeah, it's not like, we're not talking about the Renaissance.
Right.
Like, this is very quantifiable. It's not that long ago. And so it makes total sense to me that you're like, I mean, in some ways, their conversations, of course, they're challenging conversations to have. But in some ways, it's, let me just tell you stories about people you know and things that are going on in your life. The thing that happened in your grandma's life is a part of your life.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I know especially in the African-American community, there's such a thought around collective experience. Mm-hmm. So again, I don't see myself as like Mike Goodwin. Like,
right.
I see myself as a Black man, and mm-hmm. what's my legacy? What am I going to bring to the situation? How am I going to leave the place better than the folks that were before me? So I think the conversations that I have, especially with my daughter, because my sons, man, that's a lot different, because I'm at a loss, because I haven't had the conversation. I mean, he's nine, right? So, but I've been so overwhelmed, like with the guy in Brunswick, Georgia, Ahmad, recently.
Yeah.
Like, there was a portion of, like, I went on my timeline, maybe it was Wednesday, whatever day that was, where just, like, everything was on my timeline. It was, like, overwhelming. Like,
right.
And I went to college with a guy that looks strikingly familiar to me. Like, so every time I see this picture, I think about this guy I went to college with. I mean, it's just like, and I walk my neighborhood and I run.
Yeah, you run all the time, yeah.
And I'm seeing people, like, I'm constantly seeing folks that, you know, nothing has happened, but there's a, you know, people are taking a bag, that folks will slow down their cars. It's like these moments of like, oh, what's about to happen? Do I need to run a little fast? Like, I'm just constantly, I was telling somebody when I hadn't created, I want to do a bit, but it's like, you know, people talk about race and why you got to bring up race. And I'm like, for Black people, race is like data on your phone. Like, it's just always on. Like, we can't turn the data off.
Yeah.
Like, it's nonstop. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly in my head around, like, I'm going to go outside and jog and have a problem. Like, it's hard enough to jog. Like, it's that's running. That by itself.
Yeah, that was a big enough obstacle already.
It requires such an amount of willpower to get out of my house and go run on the street.
Now we add racism to this. Go ahead,
racism to the pot? Like, come on, man. I got to get abs out of this. I got to.
I think one of the, like, interesting, like, I'd be curious your thought on this. Like, you know, one of the things that, like, let's take, like, those last, I mean, there's, unfortunately, there's constantly racism.
Right.
And even worse, there's many not in the news. I so often I feel like when one goes like viral, I think, well, which ones didn't?
Right.
You know, but I, you know, if you look at, like, say these last three, you know, the Christian Cooper thing, the Ahmaud story, and then the George Floyd, if you look at these things, they happened in three very different parts of the country by three, I don't want to say three different demographics, because they all have one thing in common, white. But they happened, you know, like the woman in the park and stuff is coming out who, I mean, I haven't read all of it, and so forgive me if I'm overstepping here, but considered herself left, you know, politically leaning left, you know, and living, you know, big city, blue city, you know, and then you have the father son, which is just full on vigilante racism.
Right.
And then you have a man, a position in authority, you know, and it's all bleeding the same thing, but they all, like, I think, if it makes sense, it shows just like how deep rooted it is, not just, of course, individually, but culturally and societally in a lot of people's brains and hearts. Does that make sense what I'm saying there?
No, it does, because I think, you know, I know from, and again, I think that, you know, when you talk about race, there's always people that are, you know, I'm talking from a general perspective. Everything feels so connected, like the common denominator, you know, with the people, like the demographic, what you were saying is white, but the common denominator with all of these people, these were black men, you know, and it's just,
yeah,
it's, yeah, to be in this, you know, because folks say so many things, and I, like, you know, especially in the Christian environment, people will say, I don't see color, and we're all humans, and that's just not the real lived experience. Because you may treat people a particular way, that doesn't mean that the world or society, right. And the woman in the park was such a great example of like how quickly escalated in that, like,
no,
what?
Yeah.
Like she went into a character, like she knew,
yeah, yeah,
if I were to go at this point in my, yeah, voice and say these things,
yeah,
police will jump out of the trees, like,
she, yeah, like, she was like a soccer player flopping.
Yeah, like, I'm going to get this call.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And,
like, lady, just put the leash on your dog. Like,
exactly. I mean, I read the news story to my wife, and when I told them to mention that, you know, Cooper was like reaching, he had dog treats on. Like, we just, you're laughing, and that's what I did. I laughed because it's so ludicrous. Right. The idea, the man had dog, he was bird watching.
He's like on the board of the Arboretum or something.
He's like a Harvard grad. He wrote for Marvel. He's like a crazy accomplished citizen. And even if he wasn't those things, it's still racism. It's still blatant racism, you know?
And then I'm even watching this stuff and people like, she's choking the dog. But yeah, she's calling the
police. Yeah, I know. That, she got the dog taken away.
Yeah, the dog had to
be. That was, I made that like, half like joke / comment today, like she's talking about like my life is being ruined. They're like, oh really? You think your life is being ruined because of maybe some unfair assumptions of your character? There's some irony here.
Yeah, but I the thing I find interesting for me, like when I see the timeline, when I don't need to hear the story. I don't need to hear what happened. I don't need to hear that he's late on his child support. I don't need to hear that he was writing a bogus check.
Yeah.
A person died. And when I see that, I see my brother. I see my cousin. I see myself. I see someone. You know, and I even said this to a friend today. We were on the phone. And, you know, it's the same. Like, so imagine in these cases, imagine all these victims were white women. And so if the police officer had his knee on this white woman's neck, I'm sure in his mind he would say, this reminds me of my niece or my daughter or my wife or my sister. There's some type of humanity that's like, I can't do this to her because there's a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
In that instance, when looking at that, there's no, that's not a man to that guy, you know, and I don't know that individual, the police officer's backstory, but I wouldn't think he looked at that guy and was like, hey man, that's my buddy I shot ball with in high school, or,
right,
let's take them to the stage. Like, these, they die. Like, I'm all for crime and law enforcement. I mean, I'm a law-abiding citizen.
Like, yeah, you were in the military for 12 years.
I'm on the team.
Yeah. But,
it's like, people are dying for Nothing. Death. Like, and they stole some cigarettes. They were run, like, but he's dead. Like, come on. Like, you can't resolve death.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think part of that, man, we've become a little numb to seeing so many examples of this. It's like the new flavor of the day. It's like, oh, here's another hashtag.
Yeah, it's like school shootings. And that
right.
You just go, like, which is not the...
Right.
I'm not saying everybody. Like, it's there can be a fatigue, you know. Right. There shouldn't be. I'm speaking on...
legitimately, people are like, oh, here's another one.
Yeah. Well, I think because you want to, like, it's not unlike COVID right now, where you're like, you want to cling to progress. And when these like blatant things keep happening, you know, but like, you're just like, are we making steps forward at all? You know? Right. And so it can be disheartening, but you know, it's one of those things that like, I think about, like, I mean, a lot of people are making the knee comparison, right? This is precise, the knee thing to Kaepernick. Like, you know, I don't know if you've seen that particular like meme or post going to, like, you know, this is this knee because of this knee. And
right.
Like, you're like, well, these are precisely the things that he was trying to bring attention to.
Here's the piece about all of this, man. I think that what is important is the dialogue.
Yeah.
And what has not happened is dialogue. Because people, you know, I'm sure white folks feel uncomfortable. I don't know what to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing. If you say it in the spirit of heart of love, man, say it. If it's wrong, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And we're community. Like, people aren't trying to catch somebody saying something like, mm-hmm. I got you. You shouldn't have said you racist. Like, no, man. And then black people don't have all the answers either. Like, we don't, right. I'm not the grand poopah of racism. And I can tell you how to fix all societal ills.
Oh, I'm gonna have to take that out of your description on the spot. Man, instead of Mike Quinn, grand poopa of racism.
Oh, great and mighty racial reconciliator.
Yeah.
Like, words like race baiter. Like, why are you race baiting, and why has this gotta be about race? It's kind of like being married, right? So, like, imagine if black people were married to America. And black people were like, hey, America, we don't like it when you do. And you're like, that was so long ago. Get over that. Like, I can't tell my wife. You know what? You keep bringing up old stuff, man. Like, get over it. Like, no, it affects me.
Yeah. Like, you're like, it was pretty significant, that old stuff. This isn't about dishes.
This is some rough stuff.
Yeah. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you talking about your fam and speaking candidly. You know, it's you know, I wish that we were allowed to be in the same place together more.
Another time. You know what was interesting too, I've not been on what I would deem to be Christian podcasts. Like, I may have been on one or two podcasts.
Well, this isn't one either, so sorry.
Miss Tim's, like, I was just there.
Oh,
like,
yeah
I was coming in the door, and I was like, man, I'm about to get Tim's podcast.
Yeah. If anything, we're switching it up by having a Christian on this podcast. So I'm usually the one every week. So we, you know, we bleep it out. But the whole intent of what we're doing here is to build empathy and love and compassion and kindness through hearing stories. That's in particularly family stories.
Right.
And it's kind of like what you said earlier, and this is true of my own life, where you have intolerance. It's just where you have ignorance, It's just where you don't have life experience. It's very similar to what you were saying of the, you know, of the cop who did that to George Floyd. It's like, this isn't something that reminds him of someone, or he's characterized this, and, you know, it's just, it's ignorance. And that doesn't mean it's not hateful. Of course it's hateful. It's evil.
Right. Right.
It needs to be condemned. But, you know, again, I just, it's so easy, whether it's race or gender or your sexuality or whatever, it's so easy to paint labels on things when you've never even heard a story, you know?
No connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I just, and that's been life. Like,
yeah,
when you get to know people and understand, and yeah, you may not agree. Everything may not be peachy creamy, but at least there's a level of, I can understand where you're coming from. But I feel like people are talking at each other.
Yeah.
In today's society, like, no one's talking to listen and to.
And everything becomes immediately politicized. And like you said, you don't need to hear the backstory, or with the cop one, that immediately turns into, not all cops are bad cops, and don't condemn all cops, and they're here to protect you, and if you weren't doing anything wrong, then it wouldn't. And it just gets, it's like the best bit on that ever is Chris Rock's bit, who's the some jobs don't get to have bad apples.
Like, your pilot, you just can't have a rough day. Like,
he's like, American Airlines can't have a pilot that's like, you know, or they can't say, like, most our pilots like to land.
He got this one bad apple, though. Chris, since you bring up Chris, like, he has one of the best racial jokes.
Meet him all the time, in my opinion.
Oh, my God. He says that black people relationship with America's like the uncle that paid for you to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
But he molested you when you were a little kid. So it's like, so it's like, I appreciate.
Oh, it's like the Chappelle Cosby superhero bit. You're like, oh,
he rapes, but he saves.
Oh man, comedians, man, truth tellers.
Yeah, we are out here, man.
Yeah. Well, once again, man, I appreciate you doing this. I appreciate you speaking openly and candidly, and I appreciate, the work your wife is doing on the front lines and what you're doing with your kiddos. And, you know, hopefully you get to do a show in person. But I will tell you, if someone says that show is only streaming live and it's just an empty room, don't do it. Don't do that. Don't buy into the bright lights of the Laugh Factory sign behind you. It's not worth it.
Your self-esteem cannot put up with the damage, the carnage.
I know. All right, man. Take care, buddy.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to that episode, everybody. I wanted to give a special shout out to our designated drivers. That is our highest level of patrons. Demarius Diaz-Stevens, Troy Meacham, Dave Hoagland, and Rachel Jakewith. Really appreciate your support of the podcast. If you have not already, please like and subscribe and share. Backseaters, you mean the world to us. Thanks so much for tuning in.